Hello and welcome back to Spinalcast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today are Maya Robles, Marisa Valenti, and Kevin Hoagland. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So Maya is a business owner and bookkeeper at MAR Bookkeeping in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Marisa is currently working as a traveling physical therapist, specializing in neurologic PT. And lastly, Kevin is a PE and health teacher and coach at East Rutherford in New Jersey. We're really excited to have all three of you on the podcast today.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. So for our viewers at home, I think we should make it obvious as to why we have the three of you on here today. So all three of you grew up in a household in which one of your parents was paralyzed due to a spinal cord injury. And I think for our audience sake and you know, kind of the purpose of this podcast, I'd really like to kind of, you know, have an opportunity to ask some questions about how those circumstances kind of ended up affecting your upbringing or your own personal development. And if that sounds all right to you, I think we'll just jump into some questions.
Sounds good. Yeah.
All right. Cool. So Marisa, let's start with you. When was the first time you really realized that whenever you guys answer for the first time, maybe mention whether or not it's your mom or your dad or which parent it is who's affected. But when did you first realize that your parent was, you know, different than other parents, I guess?
That is a very good question. So my mom was in a car accident when I was 6 years old. So I mean, at six, you don't have the best memory in the world, but like, I do remember her before her accident. Mm-hmm. So I think through her rehab process, like I knew things weren't going to be the same. I knew we couldn't work out together anymore because she used to do aerobics in the basement and I'd pop in and help with her or work out with her. Mm-hmm. And she was just very active, super active with me and my brother. So she did her best to still be active after the accident, but it just wasn't the same. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing is like, I would notice if we were in public and people would stare.
Yeah.
And it's to this day still my biggest pet peeve is when people do that in public. They just stare.
Right. So,
yeah.
And what about you, Kevin? Was it kind of a similar thing for you?
No, actually. So my dad was actually paralyzed when he was 18.
Oh, okay.
So he's 65 now. So it's been, you know, 43 years. So I've only known him in the chair. I got to be honest. I would have to agree with Marisa. The staring thing, it happens a lot. It really does, especially back in the 90s and the early 2000s when I was, you know, between, you know, 8 and 13 years old. We have a shore house down in South Seaside Park. And one of our favorite things to do together is go on the boardwalk. Mm-hmm. And he's allowed to get up there because they have some accommodations up there. He can go up a ramp. But when we would go up and down the boardwalk, just people would stare. And I never understood why. Because I just knew him as the guy in the chair.
Yeah.
He's my dad, my best friend. And then eventually one day I just asked him, I was like, hey, why is everybody, you know, looking at you? And he was like, well, listen, you know, I have a spinal cord injury. You know, I was hurt when I was this age. And, you know, it never really made me look at him any differently, but I definitely agree with Marisa. Like people stare, because I don't think they stare negatively. I think they just don't understand. They're like, why is this person in the chair? You know, why aren't they moving? And, you know, my dad has a motorized chair. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, he'll run over somebody's foot. It's happened before in public. And, you know, he gets super embarrassed. But listen, these things happen. And, you know, it's just nothing out of the ordinary for me, but definitely somebody not in my position. It's a lot at once.
Right. Absolutely. And Maya, what about your experience? Which parent did you grow up with?
So for me, it was my dad. So he actually had a spinal cord injury similar to Kevin's dad when he was 16. Mm. So I, you know, my parents got married when he was already after his accident. I never knew him any other way. And for me, I really don't have any sort of moment where I realized, but it was sort of small moments like this over time as you're young, where you start to piece it together. And definitely the one that I think of is staring. For me, it was definitely when we would go to the mall. I remember going around the mall together, and my dad, I would ask him, why are people staring? I hated it so much from the beginning.
Right.
And he would say, let them stare. Didn't faze him at all. So he was a great role model for me in that way, to like really just be himself and not care what anyone else thought. But I, you know, same thing. I had the same experience where most people just like were confused or curious. Mm-hmm. And my experience with my dad was kind of like, he enjoyed when people had questions and when people would just ask him stuff.
Yeah.
So that was cool to see.
I think you bring up a good point. I think a lot of the people we've interviewed on here are open to curious people. You know, a lot of people that I've met who have been injured are very open books. You know, they kind of have to be to make it to where they are and you know, get through what they've had to get through. And a lot of times it's like, instead of making it an awkward thing that you're staring, you know, like you can ask a question. Obviously, you don't want strangers walking up to you all the time and being like, hey, how do you, you know, that's not respectful. But at the same time, I can see where you're coming from. And I think it's an interesting dynamic that develops when someone's in a chair. And that's part of why we, you know, created this podcast in the first place, is I think a lot of people, when they see someone in a wheelchair, they assume they can't walk for some reason, but they don't know what that is. And they're constantly trying to figure out what happened to that person. How did they end up that way? But I don't think many of them ever think of paralysis as like an option, as like, oh, they're paralyzed, not just, you know, they have bad legs or something. And so I think being able to bring paralysis more to the forefront, it's not as rare, I think, as people perceive paralysis to be. There's a lot of people who live with it and, you know, live great lives with it. And so that's very interesting. So kind of keying back in on it, I mean, all of you had times in which you were around your parents at young ages. I mean, two of you, your whole lives, and Marisa, you were still quite young. Did you feel like you automatically had additional responsibilities, you know, almost like becoming a caregiver at a really young age and things like that? Kevin, maybe if you wanted to start.
Yeah. So, yes, definitely. I have a younger sister as well. It was my mom, my dad, and my sister growing up. And while my mom did a lot for my dad while growing up, she also worked a job at night sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether it was refilling his drink, changing the thermostat, the most basic things that I think people don't really think about, they need help with.
Right.
Whether it's feeding them, bathing them, you know, brushing their teeth. I didn't go that deep. I like I said, that's more of my sister's in the medical field. So she kind of does that kind of stuff. But, you know, feeding, giving something to drink,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, can you look something up for me? That's a big one now as I get older, you know, when I'm hanging out with them. Hey, can you pull out your phone for me? You know, look something up. So I definitely, as young as like 6 years old, as like Marisa said, earliest I can remember back, but just, it's not really the big things, because I think when people think of people with spinal cord injuries that they need crazy amounts of help, it's the small things throughout the day that sometimes are the most difficult. And people that are looking from the outside in, sometimes like, hey, like this person needs help to eat. Like you have to physically feed them and physically give them a drink of water.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people just really take that for granted sometimes. But yeah, definitely from a young age, I wouldn't say a full-time caregiver, but I definitely helped out. My sister and I definitely helped out a lot when we were growing up.
Yeah. Do any of you, I'm assuming it's a similar story for both you, Marisa and Maya, you guys similar in that sense? You kind of took on the assistant role naturally?
Yes and no. Like, I 100% agree with what Kevin said. It's the little things. And my mom has a standing chair, and she is one of the most independent people I've ever met. She is a woman on a mission. she cooks, she cleans, she drives, she does all the things with the, you know, modifications and help. But it's like putting the milk away. or just even picking something off the ground that she can't reach it because she has zero trunk control. Mm-hmm. So it's that. But then my dad, when I was like 12, got a new job where he had to travel. And my mom's C6, C7, which means she's got arms and shoulders and some of her hands.
Okay.
So she can't get dressed by herself. My dad really is a full-time caregiver, and he's an angel. I have not heard him complain once in 23 years about doing anything.
Awesome.
But he taught, when I was 12, he taught me to do all of that, how to change a catheter, mm-hmm. how to get her dressed, transfers, all of that. And I kind of like made it my career, physical therapist now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think I have a little bit of a unique perspective when it comes to that. And it's also different because most SCIs are men. So my mom's a little bit lighter and I'm the only daughter. So she wasn't really comfortable with my brothers doing certain things. So I think for the most part, it was like the little things, but every now and then I had to go into 100%, get her into her shower chair so she could shower, help her with her bowel program, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a similar experience where it's, being a kid, I remember going to my friend's house for a sleepover during the school week one time. And her morning before school was just like, you sit on the couch and watch SpongeBob and eat breakfast. And we're just hanging out until, dad takes us to school. And I was mind blown. They were just hanging out because my mornings were like an operation. who's going to do toothbrushing? Who's going to get breakfast? If no one else is home and my dad's at home, who's going to set up snacks for the day on the counter so that he's able to eat while no one else is there? And how are we going to make sure that, everything is ready so he's okay, and doesn't need any assistance during that time when everyone else is out? Because he's also extremely independent. And I will say also very creative with modifications and different solutions. He's a great problem solver, mm-hmm. and sort of like an inventor of little tools and things like that to make things easier. But at the end of the day, you need to make sure that all the straws there are straws in all the drinks on the counter, things like that.
Right.
So our mornings were stressful and nonstop, and you're trying to take care of yourself while also taking care of everyone else. And it was expected that everyone pitches in, like, mm-hmm. just because I'm a kid doesn't mean I get to go watch SpongeBob,
Yeah.
And additionally, my mom is the main caretaker, very much so, does so much. But if she ever, for some reason, needs to go somewhere else for just one night, someone needs to be able to get my dad into bed and make sure that everything is correct and that, nothing is a little bit off that could cause a bed sore or something like that. All those little details. And that takes a decent amount of like preparation and training
totally.
And understanding what to look out for. So I have had, different times in my life of, okay, let's make sure you get that training mm-hmm. because we need to think ahead because the one main caretaker needs to also do something else. So yeah, very similar experiences totally. To you both.
Well, so that kind of leads me to my next question. I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, but as I can speak for myself. I can't speak for everyone. But as I grew up, there was a time frame from, third grade to maybe eighth grade, in which I was probably not the most pleasant person to be around for my parents. And I'm assuming, you guys probably had moments where you got frustrated or like it was a burden on you as a child to like have to deal with. Like, did you have experiences in which you were like, I just can't do this right now? And or has it always been, kind of family trumps? And I'll let anybody who wants to jump in.
I'll jump in on this first if nobody minds. I got to be honest, and it's no offense, I don't ever feel like it's a burden. And the word burden is thrown a lot around with people with spinal cord injuries. Mm-hmm. And, my dad is my best friend. I will tell anyone that to the world. He has helped me through, he's guided me. I'm 31 now. He's guided me through so many situations in my life where I would not be the man I am today without him. And he's given me, even being in a chair. So my father has been he's retired now, but he was a elected politician in Middlesex County for 25 years.
Wow.
Went to work every day, going on the road, campaigning late nights. So I might have a little different experience than, Maya and Marisa, but there's a lot of nights where he wasn't home because he was out working the campaign trail. going and having dinner with, you know, my dad recently was actually a couple of years ago was inducted into the NJ Hall of Fame, and Governor Murphy was the guy who brought him out. So it's just
very cool.
The word burden, I don't think of it as a burden, because I know if my dad was not in that chair, he would do anything for me.
Right.
And I think it's the least I can do is to pay that back. Don't get me wrong. There's been times where I'm frustrated. We've gone back and forth at each other, screaming, you know, and I thought to myself, you know, what did I do to have this happen in my life when somebody I love so much can't do anything?
Yeah.
You know, I think I blamed more of, you know, whatever higher power you want. You know, I'm Catholic. So, you know, I asked God, like, what did I do? What did he do to deserve this?
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of mental fortitude that all three of our parents have to get up every day and do it all over again. I just don't think people understand how hard it is to reset knowing you're not going to be able to move. And I think about it sometimes, like I wake up and I just get out of bed. They wake up and their minds are racing. What are they going to do? What are we doing today? So I wouldn't say the word burden. I'm happy to help whenever I can. But growing up, you know, third to eighth grade, when you're trying to find yourself, it was a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I don't know if burden is the word I would use. I will say I grew up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I learned very young and that my dad made sure I knew was to always plan ahead. Always plan ahead. I got like honestly almost like too carried away with it. Like I lost the ability to live in the moment and enjoying the moment. Mm. It would always be what's next. I have since recognized that if I just live in the future, I'm just gonna die. Like I'm not gonna enjoy. So I have since addressed that. But sometimes, because 23 out of my 29 years, my mom has been in her chair, very independent. It's all I know. So sometimes I honestly, like I do forget.
Mm.
Like I'm like, oh, she needs me to put the milk away. And I know objectively she can't do it, but like third to eighth grade, I wanted to go play with my friends. I wanted to watch Teen Titans. You know, I wanted to do
yeah.
all that type of thing. But you take a step back and you look objectively and you kind of come down to earth.
Right.
But yeah, a burden definitely wouldn't be the word.
Apologies for the record. If I said burden,
I did not mean to use an incorrect term.
No, obviously.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think same thing, Kevin, I think actually our dads probably know each other.
Your dad went to my dad's charity thing a million times.
I've met your dad many times. Okay, yes. I thought so.
Yeah, we all
and know. Kevin, your dad and my grandmother can't be together.
I was waiting for this to come up, but all three of our parents know each other.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah, like very well.
World got about very this well. Big right there.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I was waiting for this to come up in conversation.
Okay, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Because my dad is also extremely active in politics, extremely active in advocacy circles. He also just went to the holiday party with Governor Murphy in New Jersey. Like they're all in the same circles.
Awesome.
And same exact feeling of like burden is like the complete opposite of sort of the whole energy, it sounds like, of all of our parents. Like they're extremely fiercely independent and powerful, sort of like creative people. And they really have, I guess I should speak for myself. My dad has really been a powerful person to grow up with, like just learning from. And I think I have a similar experience of like every now and then it hits you and you realize like, oh, okay, he's doing all of these things, but he also, you know, has to make sure that someone can help him get up in the morning out of bed. Like he can't just do that instantly. Like
right.
There's so much on top of all the other stuff that you get to see that he has to think about and, you know, face every single day. But the way that he does it, like you would never know.
Totally.
And I think that is just an incredible thing to witness. And just like the strength of my parents is amazing.
Yeah.
But I mean, definitely. I mean, I think around when I turned 13, I started being a little grumpy about having to do certain things. But it's nice to be at a point now where we've like aged through that and we get to see our parents as adults just as we are.
Right.
And we have respect for, you know, all that they've done for us, you know, in spite of all of these things. Like, my dad is an amazing dad. And my parents are fantastic with all of these other things that they have to do on top of, you know, quote unquote, regular parenting things.
Right.
So it's amazing to be a part of.
Well, Maya, you are a very talented transitioner because that almost touches on my next question, which is, you know, now we kind of talked about being younger and how it kind of, you know, changed your lives as younger people. But I'm interested, as you've gotten older and, you know, closer, not closer, that's not a great way of putting it because you've always been close to your parents. But I feel like you develop a different type of relationship as you get older with a parent. And have you had any of those, you know, difficult conversations in which you ask them things that you never would have thought of as a kid or had them talk to you about, you know, like this was... it was brutal when you were younger and we never really talked about it because you wouldn't have understood. Have you ever had any of those kind of deep conversations with them?
I'll take this one. I see both of them are thinking, so I can drag this in.
All right.
I'll be very honest. I was out of control growing up. I really was. I was diagnosed with ADHD in like third grade. I had a severe case. Mm-hmm. So I was literally bouncing off the walls, like couldn't sit still, couldn't do anything. So my parents, you know, we went to child study team. I finally, you know, got on medication and got that taken over. But as you grow older, I really feel like, and I can't speak for Maya or Marisa, but quadriplegics don't have a very long life expectancy. And my dad is 65. I got to be honest, I'm grateful that he's 65, but I never said this out loud. I didn't think he would ever get this far.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very blessed to be that. He's had some serious health problems lately. I think over this past year, he spent 140 days in the hospital.
Wow.
In New Brunswick. Yeah. So this year has been really, really tough for my sister, myself, and my stepmom.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as Maya or Marisa said before, we mentioned bed sores and, you know, those can get infected and you can get osteomyelitis and, you know, surgeries required sometimes. So that's some of the stuff he's been going through lately. And the older I get, you know, between my sister and myself and my stepmom, you know, we'd have to spend every night with him in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to plug my stepmom here really, really big here. Her name is Eileen. Without her, I don't even think we're functioning as a family. You know, she spent, I think, 100 of those nights up there. And the older you get, you realize that time is precious. Mm-hmm. And my dad and I have had conversations, you know, what happens when, you know, you're gone? You know, my dad's nickname is the Tin Man because, you know, growing up, you know, they said he has no heart, you know, but it's in a joking way. But, you know, that's how some people compartmentalize, you know, being in a chair. You know, very independent, you know, it's like that. But sometimes, you know, it's just really tough, you know, and as we get older, you know, you realize your parents are people too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not just mom and dad. He's Kevin, you know,
right.
My dad's name is Kevin, I'm junior. And I think we really forget that. So I've had tough conversations and, you know, especially this year, because it's been really touch and go and it's been very, very scary.
Totally.
And, it's just, you know, I'd rather have those conversations now and, you know, looking back at it, but it's definitely been a help.
Yeah. I completely understand that. And shout out to Irene for the glue.
Yeah, definitely. Eileen has definitely been the glue. I would definitely say 1,000%.
Marisa, Maya, did either of you want to kind of touch on that question at all?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm sure I have, but like to memory right now, I can't say that I can recall a specific time where we like sat down and had a heart to heart about it.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of her being when I was really young, you don't know, but she was very depressed initially,
mm-hmm.
Which is super normal. It's one split second, right? It was one split second. She was on her way to a funeral, oof. But one split second, she lost the use of her legs. She was working out 5 days a week, involved in PTA, all of the things.
Mm-hmm.
But as a parent, you need to be strong for your kids. And I didn't even really recognize that until I was older. She's super happy now. She's really come to terms with it, and she's taken life by the reins, you know?
Right.
But that, I would say, is the biggest thing. But otherwise, I can't really, like, because I witnessed it, and especially through my job, I really see it in the acute phase, like right when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I've ever, like, sat down and had a conversation with her about it.
What about you, Maya?
Yeah, I definitely come from, so my dad loves to kind of just stick his head in the sand about things like this. This has been a tough year health-wise for other people in our family. So my mom and I have been having a lot more conversations this year too about preparing for both of them, you know, if anything comes up. My dad does not like to be a part of these conversations.
That's fair.
It's just not his personality. He really loves to just go and do life and not think about all the stuff. It's a little frustrating for the two of us because we do want to make sure that, you know, whatever he wants, we do correctly just in case.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough when, you know, he doesn't actually want to talk about details like this.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in an in-between place here where, like, you know, we're ready to talk about these things, but he's not.
He'll come around, I'm sure. You know, everybody kind of has to get to it on their own path. And you know, I always find it interesting because I felt like my relationship with my parents all through growing up was always very surface level. And then the older I got, the more I actually got to know them as people.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden my relationship became more like I actually cared about the things that they cared about, not just, oh, they care about what I think about. And so that was more my, you know, kind of what I was getting after. And so I think all of you are there as well. And, you know, I think obviously your parents are all very, very lucky to have the three of you. So kind of shifting gears a little bit for the next question. But I know, Marisa, you kind of went into a field in which you're doing work that's, you know, kind of tied back to a similar kind of, you know, injury and need. But when each of you were looking at, you know, either additional schooling like college or your first jobs, those sorts of things, when you were looking at those things, were you always planning to stay close to home? Did you ever feel like your parents' need for or not need for you? You know, did that play a role at all in your decision making? And maybe Maya, let's start with you on this one. We'll go backwards.
Yeah, so initially when I first went off to undergrad, I would say generally no. I was looking at schools that were, you know, close enough, still on the East Coast. So mm-hmm. It wasn't too big of a deal. I definitely didn't want to go to California or anything like that. But no, it wasn't top of mind. But I will say now, so I'm 27 now. It feels very different than it did back then, where it's much more top of mind. Mm. I just kind of think about, you know, my future being in this area and being nearby. And it's important to me that it's possible for me to be available. So definitely now. But I would say when I was like 18, it wasn't my top priority. I really, you know, wanted to be independent, and I wasn't feeling pressure from them either to be around.
Yeah. Well, I think that all sounds very healthy to me. So that's good. What about you, Marisa?
So I've always, for as long as I can remember, been filled with wanderlust. Always made it my job. And now that I'm a little bit older and my parents are in their 60s, my mom just turned 60, it's kind of more in the forefront of my mind because I've always wanted to live abroad.
Mm.
I'm actually moving to New Zealand in a year because there's a lot of paperwork that comes with being a PT abroad and visas and stuff like that. But one of the first things is like, okay, my mom's in her 60s now. My dad's not going to be able to transfer her forever. Because despite the fact that I showed him how to do it ergonomically the right way, he doesn't. He just has the big clap. So I don't think New Zealand is on the books forever. Like, I don't think I'm going to move there and stay there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do feel like not necessarily that I need to, but that I want to be around them, especially as they get older. But when I was in when I was 18, 17, 16, looking at colleges, whatever, I wanted to go as far away as I could. I was like, I want to go to California. And the reason I didn't is because my mom, it's not that she didn't want me because of her injury. She was just like, no, I'm going to miss you too much. You can stay on the East Coast.
Yeah.
So I ended up in school in Maryland. Yeah.
So I think I'm pretty much the same. So I would say between the ages of 16 and 18 were probably the worst 2 years of the relationship I've had with my dad. Just, you know, naturally going against the grain. You know, he's pushing me to be the best I can. I think it's too much back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was applying to colleges, as Marisa said, I wanted to get as far away as possible. I did not apply to a single New Jersey school. I will say that not a single one. I was in Virginia, Georgia, North Carolina. I ended up going to JMU in Virginia. But the conversation when we were 17 and 18, my dad was like, listen, if you go this far, I'm going down twice in 4 years. I'm going down for your move-in day. And I'm going for your graduation day. That was it. Because that's all he could really commit to, was a 5.5-hour drive. You know, we have a wheelchair accessible van, but, you know, on long road trips, he doesn't really do that well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you got to pull over, stuff like that. You got to regroup. So I knew this decision, you know, like Marisa said, like, I want to get as far away as possible. But, you know, he came in for move-in and he came in for my graduation day. But as I'm 31 right now, it's 1,000% different. And I can just speak to that from him being in the hospital. And actually next month, January 8th, my stepmom is going on vacation for the first time in like 3 years. So we sat down on Sunday. My sister, myself, and her, we sat down because we had to plan who's coming over what day to take care of dad.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that, but definitely growing up, not so much. And that could just be young, you know, father-son relationship, hard-headed, both of us were at the time, I think. But I always knew he wanted the best for me. But now as a 31-year-old man, professional, established, I can't go too far. I don't want to either. I can say that for a fact. I want to be close. There's been times where I've gotten a phone call from my stepmom. I'll never forget this. It was, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 years ago, but his kidneys had gone into failure.
Oh, geez.
And she called me in a tizzy. She's like, you need to get to the hospital right now. And I'll never forget that feeling, because I was driving down 40 minutes away. You know, is this it? Is this the last time I'm going to speak to him? I have so many things I want to say that I haven't said yet.
Right.
And, you know, those things start running through your mind. But I would say growing up, not as much. But today, yes, I don't see myself leaving Jersey anytime soon.
Those were all fantastic answers to that question. You know, I think that also kind of, I'd be interested in kind of the your guys' interest and kind of attention that you've given to advances in, you know, research and treatment for people who are experiencing spinal cord injuries. So I know, Marisa, with your job, you're probably pretty in tune with a lot of what's going on. But, you know, Kevin and Maya, do either of you have, as you've gotten older, have you paid closer attention to the advancements and changes and things that are happening kind of in the SCI space? Or do you primarily kind of, you know, leave that up to your parents to kind of do the research and you're just more or less involved kind of at a base level, I guess? And I'll let either one of you can jump in there.
I definitely, that's not something that I focus on at all. It's just kind of, we are where we are and,
mm-hmm.
you know, working on day to day helping. That's been my focus.
So as of right now, no. I'm going to circle back something really quick. So my dad has told me from forever that he will never try a treatment. No matter if it was clinically proven, he's had opportunities to participate in trials, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why Maya's dad and my dad know each other is my dad used to run it's called the New Jersey Central Spinal Cord Association. And they raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for spinal cord injuries. And we had a big dinner every year. And I know for a fact, I don't know, Marisa, if your parents came, I think they might've came a couple of years, but I know.
They've been a bunch of times.
It's been a bunch of times. I know it for a fact, because I remember Maya's dad being there as well. We would have this gentleman called Dr. Wise Young.
Yep.
I don't know if you've heard of him. Wise is my boy. Love Wise. Yes. Great dude.
He's great.
He would come every year and talk about the trials in China.
Yeah.
And for when I was 12, it was in rats. And then when I got to 20, they were doing human trials.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of progress they've made, you know, it's incredible. Do I think about it day to day now? Not as much, because I know for a fact he would never do one.
Mm-hmm.
Would I want him to do one? Selfishly, yes. But at his age and his condition, I don't know how his body would react.
Yeah.
But growing up, my dad has raised, you know, besides raising money, he helps people with, you know, spinal cord injuries get accessible vans. They help them make additions on their house. Like, all that money goes stuff like that. So definitely not day to day now. Like Maya said, we're just focusing on, you know, how we get to the next day. But growing up, it was in my face, because he was always trying to raise money. What's going on with trials? And the one thing I'll say about my dad is none of this is for him. He hates credit. Mm-hmm. He absolutely despises it. He hates the spotlight. When he was nominated to get into the New Jersey Hall of Fame, he actually threw a fit. He was so upset that somebody like nominated behind his back. You know, he doesn't do it for the accolades. He does it because he truly loves to help people. And I get that from him myself. I love helping others. That's why I got into education, to help kids.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely not day to day. But growing up, like I said, that's how the three of us are connected. So definitely have, I don't know much now, but a couple of years ago, you could ask me. I know Wise Young.
Yeah.
You know, he's still doing great work.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. You know, Peter Morton, the executive director of MCPF, he's very similar in the fact that, you know, he's not in this for himself. He's in this for everybody else. He's, you know, from the get-go, he's like, you're not raising money for me. You're raising money for someone 20 years from now who hopefully won't have to experience what I did, and that sort of thing. But if you haven't looked into a bunch of the research as of late, I highly suggest just checking some of it out. We've interviewed a handful of really incredible scientists on here. The one I do want to shout out, it's actually probably our most viewed and listened to podcast. It's Dr. Gregory Cortine and Dr. Block. They're in Switzerland, and they've created a brain-spine interface using electrical currents and things like that. And it's a flipping incredible advancement in technology. And it's just really cool to see how passionate people who are not personally affected by paralysis, how passionate they can be about paralysis and you know, finding these solutions that even bring a little bit of function back to somebody. They're just trying to find, you know, the smallest ounce for those who could really benefit from it. And so I think it's worth peeking into if it's something you're interested in. We're doing pretty good on time, but I've got two more questions I want to hit you guys with. The first being a little bit of a convoluted, I guess, question where you can kind of take it in whatever direction you want. But I'm just kind of interested in like a lesson that you've learned from living with someone with paralysis or how it's, you know, shaped you as an individual in kind of one key way. And Marisa, maybe we start with you.
Yeah, I kind of touched on it before because this is a question I have been asked before. And I'm just such a planner now. Like I'm always prepared.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, okay, that's a lie. I'm not prepared for like the stupid things. Like I never have a pen on me. I never know where my keys are type thing. But like I just took my mom to Colombia, for example, for a month. And Colombia is a wonderful place. And fun fact, nobody stared down there. Nobody stared.
Wow.
People on the street would offer help. They would come straight up and they'd be like, "Te ayudo," which means, "Can I help you?" in Spanish, like every day. But Colombia is not a great place for handicapped people.
Right.
Sometimes you get a cutout on the street. And even then the cutout is still probably like 3 inches from the ground. So my mom has this really nice standing chair. We couldn't use it outside the apartment. she was in her manual for like 70% of the trip.
Wow.
But you have to, like, I just really, really think ahead. You bring that transfer board with you everywhere. So I'm 5'2 and like 125 pounds. I'm not my dad. I can't do the plop. I'm really good at a transfer board transfer, but it's just, and you always, like, for her ileostomy bag, we always bring an extra outfit just in case we're out and there's no, you know, it's just those little things that you got to think about.
Yeah.
So I definitely am now a very think ahead person, very prepared person.
That's great. Kevin?
All right. I got to be honest. What was the question again? I was listening. I lost to Marisa's answer, to be honest.
No, that's perfect. It's a great answer. I'm imagining her mom in like an off-road wheelchair in Colombia, just having a blast, you know?
She had a great time.
But no, the question was, you know, either a single lesson or a, you know, one specific way in which living with your dad's injury has kind of shaped you as a person or taught you something.
Got it. It 1000%. Watching my, you know, growing up watching my dad, it made me want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I mentioned before, and as you mentioned in you talking, he doesn't do it for himself. The amount of times that he's taken a phone call, he's taken a meeting, just, you know, how can we get this stuff out to you? How can we get this, you know, equipment out to you? How can we get you this van? You know, what we can do. And like I said, it just made me want to be a better person, because at the end of the day, you know, you don't ask for these things to happen to you. You know, they just happen. They're freak accidents. And it just, I get a little choked up because, you know, he's done so much for others and has just never asked for something in return.
Mm-hmm.
And the more and more I'm talking right now, I just keep thinking of the thousands, the hundreds of things he's done. Watching him made me want to be a better person. I just happened to get into education. I love sports. You know, me and him bonded through sports growing up. We've watched many Giants, many Yankees games together. He's taken me to so many sporting events, Rutgers, Giants, Yankees. And it was never a problem. It was never, how are we going to get in the stadium? It was like, what are we going to do for Kevin? You know, he was always thinking of me.
Yeah.
And I'd like to translate that for others and my students.
Right.
You know, and so I think it's just going to help others and just doing it for the right reasons, doing it when nobody's watching, because at the end of the day, you know, we're all going to be judged. And I think he's just a really special guy, just not asking for anything and just helping.
Awesome. What about you, Maya?
Yeah, I think for me, the main through line and lesson of growing up with my dad, is really that it doesn't matter. Like, nothing really matters. We're all sort of in the same boat and able to do anything that we choose to. Like, it wasn't until maybe I was 23 that I even understood that it's really common for people with disabilities to not work. I had no idea that that was such a common thing.
Mm-hmm.
My dad has a JD. He worked for the Division of Disability Services for New Jersey State. He's a professor at Rutgers. He's the president of many organizations. Like, he does everything. And it's never been like a, oh, good for you. Wow, you did it. You know, it's always just, okay, you're a person, you're living life, you're doing anything you want, and you're going for it. And that's really what he's always shown to everyone around him. Just being yourself and doing what you want. And he has very much, there was one time he explicitly said to me, don't let life get you down. And it's always stuck with me because I really think that's his life philosophy.
Right.
Is just, things are going to happen. That's just life. But you can choose what to do with it. And he's always choosing to make something great of it. So, you know, that's just been a great way to grow up.
Yeah, it's true perseverance and, you know, taking, as Marisa said, life by the horns and you know, letting yourself decide how it's going to turn out instead of leaving it to the world around you. All fantastic answers. The last question I have here for you is really, you know, surrounding those individuals or people who end up watching this or listening to this episode and are maybe, you know, newly involved with an injury. Maybe their parent recently got hurt or a family member recently got hurt. And, you know, what is one kind of piece of advice that you'd lend to someone who's going to be spending a lot of time with someone who's, you know, experiencing paralysis? Is there anything specific that you would lend? And Kevin, why don't we start with you on this one and we'll go from there.
Sure. Absolutely. I think it's very important to talk about it. Growing up, like I said, it was a little different for me because I knew him that way, but just having conversations like, I wish I could have done a lot of things different when I was younger. I wish I could have asked a lot of different questions. Now that I'm older, I understand that. But I think just having an open communication with your parent, because like I said, sometimes at the end of the day, we forget they were people before they were parents. They were regular, you know, gal or guys just, you know, going about their lives, mm-hmm. and a freak accident happened to them and just, you know, flipped their lives on their head. I would just say be very, very open. You know, take help when it comes. Some people are too proud to take help. Always accept help and always offer help if you can. I'm big on, like I said, I would always volunteer for the Central Jersey Spinal Cord Association whenever you get a chance. But I offer my help in different ways now. I used to volunteer at a young men's home over in Highland Park for teens that are homeless. Mm-hmm. And just I did that because just watching my dad just help others and just over and over again. But I really think it's important just to have open communication. Ask questions because, you know, eventually, like I said, people with these injuries, they don't have a very long longevity of life usually. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to wake up one day and want to ask something and you don't have the ability to ask it anymore.
Absolutely. Marisa?
I think that's a really great answer, Kevin. And I want to kind of piggyback off of that. That yes, absolutely offer the help. But I've also seen this as a physical therapist that some family members, they offer like too much help. And then the patient, or I shouldn't say the patient, but the person with, that's just my work speaking. Mm-hmm. The person with the injury kind of, I don't want to say it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, but they get used to doing nothing. And there's so much potential to do so much. Like, just look at all three of her parents. You know, my mom worked. She worked at Kessler.
Yeah.
And she drives. She cleans. She's always been there for me. She's been like a normal mom to me. I grew up with dinner every night made by her. And she accepted help, but she's also stubborn. She'll try to do it. She'll try to do too much, if anything, but that's a whole different story. But yeah, so there's just recognize that, yes, absolutely offer that help, but there's a line.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Maya, last but not least.
Yeah, I would say try to find someone that you can talk to who's experienced something similar. I think that's huge because it can feel very, very like specific and in that isolating, even if it's, you know, semi-common. If you can find anyone to talk to who's experienced anything similar, I think it's huge because it's, especially for people who experience this later on in their lives, not like us. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin whose dad got ALS, and the two of us were able to get really close because I understood, you know, the difficulties of some things she was dealing with that were so absurd to her. But for me, it was just like, okay, yeah, of course. Right. So if you can find someone to talk to, I would really recommend that. Also, what I've learned from my dad is just like, be creative. Just open your mind to thinking about things in different ways. Like we're all very used to doing things a certain way that we've done all our lives. But this is an opportunity to rethink how things are done and what this one object is good for. Maybe this object could be the solution to a problem that your family member's having. And then one other just like general tip that I would say for people new to this world is there's a really common phenomenon that happens where if someone else is maybe trying to help your parent or whoever it is, help your parent do something, they'll talk to you about your parent. They'll say, oh, what can I do for him? Mm-hmm. Oh, does he want this over here? And you can just say, why don't you ask him? You can talk to him directly.
Right.
That is unfortunately really common, but just a really simple like tool to have in your tool belt because it does come up.
No, I think that's a great thing to note. And I've even witnessed that from a third person on the outside. So I think that's great. You guys all are fantastic. You know, I just want to thank you again on behalf of everyone here at MCPF and Spinalcast. Thank you for participating in today's episode. And you know, I think this will be really valuable, to the audience. And I think it's just a lot of great content. So thank you very much.
Hey, David, can I say one more thing before we get off?
Because, absolutely. Please do.
I think you shouldn't feel sorry for the people with spinal cord injuries too, because I think that's a really big thing.
Yeah.
People feel automatically, they feel so sorry for them. Like their life is over. They kind of look down on them. But if you look at our three parents, all three of them worked. They added to society, but there's a big misconception that people feel sorry for them.
Right.
And if somebody said that to my dad straight face, like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
I have two beautiful kids. I have a great career. Do not feel sorry for me. You know, people, I just don't. It's a big thing I've come across with my life. Like everyone, whenever I tell a story about my dad, how he got injured, he's like, wow, that's so tough. I feel so bad. And my first thing is, why do you feel bad? I'm here right now telling you like all these great things that are happening. But I just wanted to get that in before we left, because that's a big, big thing and a big stigma where people feel sorry for people when they have no, absolutely should never do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's tough as, you know, someone who's not directly involved. The natural inclination is to, you know, feel sorry, I hate the word pity, but almost feeling pity. Like I can't even put my head in that position to even think what you're going through, you know, that sort of thing. But at the same time, you raise a really good point in the fact that all of these people are, you know, they're choosing to live their lives. They're choosing to drive forward. They're choosing to, you know, they clearly are not looking for that. They're not looking for you to feel bad for them. They are looking for you to treat them the same as you would if they weren't in the chair in the first place. And they just want to keep moving with life and, you know, going where they want to go and doing what they want to do. And I think that's a very good lesson to make sure that we project to everyone who's listening or watching. And to that point, anybody who's watching on YouTube, you know, I'd love it if you hit that subscribe button, bell icon, that sort of thing, so you know when new episodes drop. If you're on a favorite podcast platform, you can give us a follow. You know, I'd love that as well. But honestly, Maya, Marisa, Kevin, thank you again for joining us on today's podcast. And thank you to your incredible parents for being such a driving force in the SCI community and just being as incredible of people as they are. So
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.